RKO didn't set fire to it, but nor did they show it much. Citizen Kane failed to recoup its costs at the box office. It had a disappointing Oscar night too, nominated for 9, won only 1 for Best Screenplay, which Wells shared with his co-writer Herman Mankiewicz. And yet, by 1962, Citizen Kane was officially the greatest film of all time, as decided by a constituency of critics and directors polled by Sight and Sound magazine. It's stayed at the top ever since. So how did that happen? How did it go from being a candidate for the Furnace to a half century in the number one spot? This year, Sight and Sound has again asked critics and directors to name their top 10 films. They even asked me. And for me, Kane was impossible to ignore, partly because I felt the anxiety of critical influence, but mainly for personal reasons. When I was 15, I saw Citizen Kane at the Manchester Corner House. They sold too many tickets, I had to sit on the floor. And there, right under the screen, I acquired two things: a crick in the neck and the sense that the pictures were something to be taken seriously. At Sight and Sound, they had the same attitude to the cinema and to their 10-yearly poll to discover its 10 most highly regarded works. So I went to the British Film Institute to speak to the magazine's editor, Nick James, as the votes were still being counted. And this time he told me they're doing things differently.
Well, the difference mainly is that we've gone for a vastly greater number of people. We decided that since this was the age of the internet and everybody now writes about cinema, that we ought to get a sense of that and also a much greater sense of the international view of what the greatest films are. It's very important that, because in the past we've always talked about it being an international poll, but it was nearly always 50% Anglophone, but now it's not.
So those things needed revising then, because when politicians change boundary lines and things like that, they're accused of gerrymandering, aren't they, and trying to massage the result.
Yes, well, you know, we have changed the rules and it may have some different effects, but on the other hand, it may be that people will find that it hasn't changed that much. I couldn't possibly comment at this point.
So with a month to go before the results were announced, Nick was as silent as D.W. Griffith's Intolerance. But what was clear was that this would be a very different poll to the last one. 1,200 critics had been asked to take part, compared to just under 150 in 2002. Hundreds of directors had also been approached. But why do it at all? After all, isn't it just a game?
It is the most exciting thing for cinephiles to get involved in. The great thing about canons, really, more than anything else, is they focus the mind. They give you something to debate about. Of course, canons are iniquitous and they support dead white males and all the usual cliches that come out about them. But they are fantastic for crystallising, you know, where you are in the state of cinema and the relation of today to cinema history. And that gets more interesting each time that we do it. This is the 7th time we've done it.
The true protagonist of Citizen Kane is a man whose face we never see. He's a newspaper hack trying to discover the significance of Kane's mysterious last word, Rosebud, a word that promises to explain the man. He fails.
I don't think any word can explain a man's life. No, I guess Rosebud is just a piece in a jigsaw puzzle.
But in the closing seconds, we the audience see what Rosebud is. So Citizen Kane is a film about the search for meaning.